Recording in progress.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you, Honorable Sir?
Thank you.
I'm okay. Thank you very much. We are left with 3 minutes before we start. Good morning once again. It's 9 o'clock. I think we should start. We do have a quorum, so we can make decisions on the adoption of the minutes. Can you flight the first set of minutes? Draft minutes of the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Correctional Services, date 1st April 2022, on the virtual platform. The minutes are taken as read. They were circulated last night. They are taken as read. Are there any corrections on page 1? Page 2? Page 3. Page 4. Is there a proposal for the adoption of the minutes?
Morning, Chair. I'll propose.
Honorable Werner Horn proposes. In a second.
Now that they are they are adopted by Honorable Horn, I am bound to second, Chair. It's very rare.
I think the tree is back now. The minute or second, anyone who object? No, the minutes have been adopted. Thank you very much. Next set of minutes. Draft minutes of the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Correctional Services, date 3 May 2022. Full overview of the annual performance plans and budget votes by the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services briefing by the Office of the Chief Justice on the Annual Performance Plan 2022-2023 and budget vote 2022 MTEF. The minutes are going to be taken as read. Are there any corrections on page one? Page two. Page three. Page four. Page four. Any mover for the adoption of the minutes?
I will Manuho Trufan move for the adoption of the minutes.
Honorable Neville Trufan moves for the adoption of the minutes. And Mr. Conde?
Swart seconds. Okay.
Honorable Swart seconds. Thank you very much. Any objections? No objections. The minutes are taken. Adopted, sorry. Thank you very much. The next set of minutes, 4th May, draft minutes of the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Correctional Services, briefing by the Department of Correctional Services and Judicial Inspectorate for Correctional Services on annual performance plans 2022-2023 and budget 2022 MTF. The minutes are taken as read. And any correction on page one? Page two. Page three. Any mover for the adoption of the minutes?
Move, Chair.
Honorable Horn moves. Any seconder?
Yes, second, Chair.
Honorable Mora seconds. Any objection? No objection, the minutes are adopted. Next set of minutes, 6 May. Correctional Services, 6 May. Discussion of labor dispute between the Department of Correctional Services and KwaZulu-Natal Regional Commissioner. Briefing by the Department of Justice and Correctional and Constitutional Development and Legal Aid South Africa on annual performance plan and budgets. Any corrections on page one? Page two. Page three. Any mover for the adoption of the minute?
Can
we hold the hand move?
Second.
Okay. Any objections? No objections. The minutes are page two. The next set of minutes. Briefing by the National Prosecuting Authority and Public Protector South Africa on annual performance plan and budget. That is the 10th of May. The minutes are going to be taken as read. Any corrections on page one? Page two. Page three. Any mover for the adoption of the minutes?
I'll move.
Oh,
Honorable Engelbert Moore in a second.
Woman, you heard Driftin seconds.
Any objections?
Everybody's falling over themselves and now suddenly there's no one.
What is the problem, Honorable Petitbach?
There's no problem, Honorable Chair. I'm saying everyone's falling over themselves to propose and second and now there's nobody to propose and second. They must all wake up.
No, they have done that. It's you who are sleeping.
No, I've been sitting and listening to them and now all of a sudden for this one there's nobody.
No, they have. They have. The minutes are grade 2. Next set of minutes. Briefings, minutes of the 11th of May 2022, briefing by Special Investigative Unit and Information Regulator on Annual Performance Plans and Budget. Any corrections on page 1? Page 2? Page 3. Any mover for the adoption of the minutes?
Honorable Newhout Drogen moves for adoption, sir.
Honorable Newhout Drogen moves for the adoption of the minutes. Any seconder?
Thank you.
Honorable Swart seconds. Thank you very much. Any objections? No objections. Minutes are agreed to. The next set of minutes. Minutes of the 13th of May 2022, briefings by the South African Human Rights Commission on annual performance plans and budgets. The minutes are going to be taken as read. Any corrections on page 1? Page 2, page 3, any mover for the adoption of the minutes?
Honorable Breitenbach says she will move, Jen.
Honorable Breitenbach, are you moving?
Yeah, I don't mind moving. I'd like to point out to the Honorable Horn that I'm capable of speaking for myself. So.
I was expecting that... Okay, let's do it properly. Any mover for the adoption of the minute?
Yes, I'll move.
Honorable Breitenbach moves. Any seconder?
One second, sir.
Honorable Swartz seconds. Any objections? No objections. The minutes are agreed to. Minutes of the 17th of May. Public hearings on the prevention and combating of hate crimes and hate speech bill. The minutes are taken as read. Any corrections on page 1? Page 2. Page 3. Page 3. Any mover for the adoption of the minutes?
I'll move, Jane.
Honorable Horn moves. Any seconder?
No one, Jane.
Honorable Mola seconds. Any objection? No objection. Minutes are agreed to. Next set of minutes. Minutes of the 18th of May 2022, public hearings on the prevention and combating hate crimes and speech bill. Minutes are taken as read. Any corrections on page 1? one. Each prayer. Any more for the adoption of the minutes?
I move, Chair.
Honorable Mola moves in a second.
Honorable Nihal Griffin, second.
Honorable Nihal Griffin, second. Any objection? No objections. Minutes agreed to. The next set of minutes.
We are done, Chair.
We are done.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Chair.
Yes.
It's the other side, Chair. Our apologies, Chair. I have since noted that we missed one set, Chair, where we dealt with the report when we adopted the report.
Yes.
That set when we applied. So can we quickly project that last one? It was on the Monday, the 16th, Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. Minutes of the 16th of May 2022, consideration and adoption of the draft report on the annual performance plan for 2022-2023 of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, vote 25. The minutes are taken as read. Any corrections on page 1? Page 2? And then move up for the question of the minute.
Honorable
Neville Trahan Moss, any second?
Second, Chair.
Honorable Colin Mora, seconds. Any objections? No objections. Minutes are agreed to. So, Committee Secretary, we are left with the minute of yesterday now, ne?
Yes, Chair, and today.
And today, okay. Thank you very much. So we said, Mr. Who's from the department, who's Mr. Our legal drafter. We said he must come at 10. So I think we have to adjourn until 10 because we agreed that we will start at 10. Unless he is on the line. Has he joined Mr. Romano?
Chair, I don't see him.
Okay. So can we adjourn until 10? Or should we start at 9:30, or should you ask him if he's ready? Then we can start at 9:30.
Chess Watcher, to be started 9:30, but please note my apology from 10 on for the week's meeting.
Yes, for the week's meeting, yes. That is noted. Is there a second for Honorable Swart's suggestions for 9:30?
Honorable Newhart, second.
Honorable Newhart,
9:30, if he is ready.
If he's ready, yes. So at 9:30, we will come back and then we will be briefed by Committee Secretary if he is ready. I just forgot his name. I don't know what.
It's Hank Chair. Sorry, Chair.
Yes.
It's Hank, Mr. Dupree. I've managed just to get hold of him while you were discussing the issue of time. He says he just needs 15 minutes. So at 9:30, he'll probably be joining, Chair.
Thank you very much. Let's meet at 9:30.
Same link, Chair. Members, same link. We won't close the meeting.
Okay, thank you.
Maybe, Chair, before we adjourn.
Okay.
I've just received an apology from Honorable Ramundi. She will join us later. I think she's planning to keep down.
Oh, okay. That's fine. Thank you very much.
Chair, before that?
Honorable Mola?
you forgot to address the committee that it's Africa Day today. Thank you.
Oh, my apologies. Yes. Can you do that, Honorable Mola?
I think let's do that when we reconvene.
Okay, sure. Thanks. Sure.
Good morning, Honorable Hank.
Morning, Mr. Secretary. How are you?
Hey, God is good, man. Are you well?
Yes, we are well, thank you. We were only expecting to talk to you in about half an hour's time, but it's always nice to see you up and early and up and about.
Oh, wow, wait a second. Look, can we test your sharing abilities?
So let me
sort that out now. I've given you permission. You can go ahead. Your technological skills have improved.
Well, thanks to you, Mr. Secretary.
Yes, you can remove it now. You'll only do so when you're called upon. Thanks.
Good morning, Mr. Dupree.
Morning, Mr. Chairman.
Recording in progress.
To your committee members, are you well?
We are well. Sorry for breaking our promise or our contract with you. We know that we had said that we would start the term. We thought that the amount of work is going to take long. But we finished much earlier, and we thought that if we start early, we might finish early so that you can have the rest of the day with you for yourself. So, but sorry for the inconvenience caused.
Not to worry, Mr. Chair. We are used to being on standby for the committee at short notice, so we are used to that. And thank you for giving me off for the rest of the day. I'm going to speed through this thing by the speed of white light. I'm going to hang around for the rest of the day under a tree or something.
So we are in your hands. But before we start, Honorable Mola, you said you would want to address us. I thought that because there's going to be a debate today in the House and all political parties are going to be participating, you said you want to address us?
No, Chair, I think let's let it to the House to deal with it. But I can only say happy Africa Day to everyone in the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, especially to Honorable Horn, your friend.
Yeah, it is so. It would seem today is and now the Honorable Janky is of course ran off to KZN for the week after he in the very last debate tried his very best to mess up relationships within this committee. But we're still waiting for him. We have no qualms with the Honorable Mola. He's a good African, but that giant guy, we're waiting for him.
I won't pass the message. Okay, thank you very much. Over to you. Honorable Nivot Johan and the committee secretary.
No, Chair, I just wanted to say that Honorable Horn surely misses Honorable Janki.
I think so. Committee secretary.
Hi, Wena.
Morning once again, Chair. We have since received an apology from Honorable Yako. She's attending the match with GPV in Mthatha.
Oh, okay. That will be noted. Thank you very much. Over to you, Mr. Dupree.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, in anticipation of the debate this afternoon, I have tried to, you will recall that we've gone through the 15-page summary yesterday where the department concedes the proposals that were made and that appropriate amendments will be brought to the committee. This document relates to comments by those institutions that we have ran over yesterday where the department does not agree with the proposals that have been made. I would just like to show you an example of what I'm going to propose to the committee. You will see the highlights. I went through the document last night and this morning to try and compound it a bit further for us. I don't think the interested parties need to be concerned that we only highlight a few of the issues that might have been raised by them. The summary aims to be a true reflection of everything that they have said. I would just like to show you an example, and I'm going to skip those, and I'm just looking for an example. I apologize. I'll go back to the start or the beginning of the document. But you will note that at places, and now it's just Murphy's Law, now I'm going to struggle to get an example of that. For example, here, under the definitions clause, we've highlighted only the institution that made the submission. The reason why we wouldn't want to bore the committee with running through that, with your permission, of course, Mr. Chair, is that we largely consider those as technical proposals or suggestions, and the department's response is there. So without further ado, I would also like to propose, with your permission, Mr. Chair, although I have taken the trouble to highlight Table 1, but you will recall that when we summarize bills for the comments on the bills for the committee, the Table 1 reflects general comments. So that's overall general comments associated with the bill. And then Table 2 goes into the nitty-gritty, if I may so call it. So with your permission, Mr. Chair, I would like to request that jump straight into Table 2. Table 1 is the first 8 pages of the document. We were now able to document before 7 pages. In addition to yesterday's 15 pages. So our math makes sense to the extent that 15 plus 47 is 62, which was the original summary. So, Mr. Chair, may I request permission to go to Table 2?
Members, do you have any problem with that? No. On a resort?
That's fine, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Chair, with regard to the definitions clause, Clause 1, the Banking Association of South Africa notes that reference is made throughout the bill to interested and affected parties, but neither of those terms are defined. Now, you will find that we're going to encounter quite a number of these type of proposals, which are similar to this one. And our response is merely that it's not necessary to define these terms, because if they are not defined, they bear their ordinary dictionary meaning and therefore need not be defined. The Council for the Advancement of South African Constitution.
Sorry, Mr. Dupree. Members, I think as Mr. Dupree proceeds, whenever you feel that you want to address something, you just raise your hand. You won't stop after each and every definition or after each and every clause. If you disagree with something or you want to raise something, we just raise it as we proceed. Is that in order, members?
Yes, Chair.
Thank you very much. You can proceed, Mr. Dupree.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So CASAC made a similar proposal, but only with regard to right in land. And once again, the response is actually similar to the one that was in respect of the proposal of Banking Association of South Africa. The CASAC also indicated that the bill would constitute an ouster of the High Court's ordinary jurisdiction over property or land disputes. The response there is that the jurisdiction of the High Court would not be ousted unless the act in question, in other words, those different pieces of principal legislation, affords the Land Court exclusive jurisdiction. We have explained to the committee yesterday, and we'll see it later in our summary, that the department identified 33 pieces of legislation that could fall under the jurisdiction of the Land Court. However, the concern was that one wouldn't want to overburden the court immediately while it is being established. So the department consulted with the departments concerned and were able to request them, and they were able to indicate to us which would be regarded as priority legislation, and that is why we've got 9 pieces of legislation that will fall under the exclusive jurisdiction of the court. Just to remind the committee members, those are technical...
Sorry, Mr. Dupree. Now, do you mean that for the remainder of the other legislation, then a bill will have to be brought back to Parliament for amendments as we develop capacity, or the clause will be written in such a way that it does accommodate an incremental capacity increase in the state?
The Chair, yes, the idea is to have a staggered approach, so in 2 or 3 years' time, additional pieces of legislation may fall under the jurisdiction of the Land Court. However, it's not necessary to amend the Land Court legislation, because the Land Court legislation is based on the formula that the Superior Courts Act is based, and that is that it merely establishes the court. It's all the other pieces of legislation that are in the statute book that afford jurisdiction to our courts. So strictly speaking, when the jurisdiction of the Land Court will be expanded in future, it will be those amendments will be affected in terms of those different pieces of principal legislation. Thank you, Chair. APIS submits that the definition of a dispute should not include an alleged dispute. The department does not support the proposal, as that would exclude an allegation which would arguably not be classified as a dispute in certain contexts. They also submit that the challenge with an alleged dispute is that it may open the door for the court to adjudicate on matters which has not followed the correct procedure. Now, to exclude an alleged dispute may result in unintended consequence where a legitimate matter is excluded from the adjudication by the court on the basis that it is an alleged dispute. Once again, technical proposals. Agri SA, with regard to clause 2, the purpose and objects of the Act, submits that clause 2.1 is misleading and should be deleted or amended, as a court cannot enhance and promote access to land. Now, the department's response is, Mr. Chair, by being a dedicated permanent court, the land court will adjudicate and resolve disputes and thereby contributing towards the ideal or goal of access to land. The Socioeconomic Rights Institute argues that the bill places more emphasis on contested land claims and does not refer to eviction proceedings under PI and ESTA. To address this, the bill could specifically outlaw evictions that lead to homelessness, and this last sentence is actually the crux of the recommendation by them. The department's response is that the bill, which is aimed at establishing the land court, is not the ideal vehicle to outlaw evictions, which is a matter that is dealt with in another separate piece of legislation. With regard to clause 3, the establishment, AfriForum is of the view that the land court should not be a court of equity. The department's response in this regard is that land issues are matters that require equity considerations in some instances, as is the case with section 33C of the Restitution Act, which requires equity to be a factor to be taken into account by a court when making a decision. Kasek Agri SA, more of a technical nature. The Legal Resources Center also queried the reference to law and equity. Their argument is that Section 39 of the Constitution provides that legislation must be interpreted in line with the values of the Constitution. The Department's response in this regard is that the interpretation of Section 39 of the Constitution is correct, but it is our submission that it does not preclude the legislature from emphasizing the intended character of the court. Western Cape technical recommendations. With regard to clause 4, the composition of the court, the legal academics refers to clause 4.1c, and they say that presumably that clause refers to the judge president. That was also supported by natural justice lawyers. Now, we're going to find this under the composition of the court, the land court, as well as the land court of appeal, these type of proposals or observations. But we would like to point out to the committee that the term president is defined in clause 1 as the president of the republic. So wherever throughout the bill we use the term president, it means the president of the republic, but where it comes to the judge president of the court, then it is written that way. The natural justice lawyers argues that the phrase "as many other judges as may be" is not supported because it is too broad. In the case of the land claims court, the lack of a specific minimum number of judges that court went from having 5 judges to only having acting judges. The department's response is that it should be kept in mind that the court's jurisdiction will be extended in future with a concomitant increase in the workload of the court. To provide a minimum threshold of the number of judges in the land court will serve no useful purpose. AfriForum Technical Land Claims Court, it is submitted that it's not clear why this section is required or precisely what it means. That is now with regard to clause 6, the seat of the court. We argue that the clause is self-explanatory and necessary. The judge president should be empowered to determine that a matter may be heard elsewhere than at the seat of the court. Agri-SA technical. And once again, Mr. Chair, I'm not belittling or I'm not skipping this on purpose, but as I indicated that the technical proposals, we have summarized them, and the committee members can always go back and have a second read on it. May I just ask, Mr. Chair, I suppose all the members did receive the summary last night.
I think that if they did not, they would have indicated.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Now, with regard to Clause 6, still the seat of the court, the National House of Traditional Leaders, recommends that the word may be replaced by must to compel the court to hold its sitting for the hearing of any matter at a place elsewhere than at the seat of the court. The department does not support the submission as that would compel the court to hold its sittings elsewhere, even if it would be expedient to hold that specific sitting at the seat of the court. Legal Resources Technical, Socioeconomic Rights Institute Technical, Land Claims Court with regard to the jurisdiction of the court, Clause 7 of the Bill, Technical. With regard to the jurisdiction of the court, Clause 7, Agri-SA says that it's not clear what is meant by each court in Clause 7.3. Now, the department's response in this regard is that the intention is to establish a land court which may hold its sittings elsewhere other than at the main seat. And the court established elsewhere should have the area of jurisdiction that it serves. No satellite courts are intended. The legal academics with regard to Clause 7.3c, they argue that Clause 7.3c appears very similar to Clause 6.1, and it is not clear what the difference is. Now, Mr. Chair, Clause 6.1 empowers the judge president to decide where the court may hold sittings. However, such places must be formally proclaimed by the minister in terms of Clause 7.3c. And this is not a new provision. There are examples of these type of provisions in existing legislation. With regard to Clause 8, the appointment of judges of the court, the LARC technical AfriForum indicates that the aspects of race and gender should never be overemphasized when it comes to the selection and appointment of any judicial officers. And the department's response is quite straightforward in this regard. The intention is to require that race and gender be considered but not be a determining factor. Kasak, it is submitted that...
Sorry, Mr. Dupree, but I think maybe you should use the Constitution to respond to that clause because I think there is an emphasis in the Constitution that the judiciary should reflect race and gender composition. You can proceed.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just making a note for myself to get back to your question. However, if you recall, yesterday a similar issue was raised in our 15-page document, which will be, with that minor amendment proposed, if I remember correctly, by the legal academics, then this concern of yours will be addressed. But I have made a note, and we'll go back to that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kasek, it is admitted that in the interest of preserving the separation of powers, the minister should only be able to do so in consultation with the judge president or deputy judge president, and not only after consideration. Now, this relates to the appointment of acting judges, Mr. Chair. The response here is that this proposition would be in conflict with Section 175(2) of the Constitution, which obliges the minister to appoint acting judges to other courts after consultation with the senior judge of the court concerned. The Land Claims Court, the expression half of whom must be judges at the time of appointment in Section 84A, limits access to the bench of those judges who are experienced and also advocates who have been acting in the Land Claims Court. Now, the department's response here is that the intention of the bill is to ensure that half of the persons appointed in the bench are experienced judges, so that not all of the appointees are taken from the pool of, for example, advocates and attorneys. AgriSA Technical, Mr. Chair. ACBIS, Section 8 requires the President to appoint judges on the advice of the Judicial Service Commission, but permits the Minister to appoint acting judges. While this provision is broadly in line with similar legislation such as the Labour Relations Act, it is unclear why the duty is split between the President and the Minister. And once again, we only refer to Section 175(2) of the Constitution. And I might, from my side, Mr. Chair, add that the so-called split between the President and the Minister is, I think, mainly a matter of convenience, because when there is a need for an acting judge, that appointment must be made fairly quickly, instead of going through the whole process of the President appointing on advice of the JSC. The SA Institute of Race Relations also make mainly technical proposals. The legal academics, with regard to clause 84A, Chair, I don't believe it. My throat is giving me... May I please be excused for 2 minutes? I just need to get some water.
Can you come back at 10 o'clock?
Mr. Dupree, are you fine now?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. The legal academics, they made a similar remark, but we would like to highlight this to you because it's important to read clause 84A correctly. But they propose that judges of the court should not be required to be judges of the High Court. Specialist persons should be appointed permanently to the court. This proposal is supported by the Legal Resources Center. The department would like to point out to the committee that paragraph A should be carefully read to the extent that there is a quasi proviso that at least half of the persons who are appointed to the court must be appointed from persons who are not judges at the time of appointment to the court. The natural justice lawyers, Chair, I skipped that one, but that must also actually be, that's a technical proposal. The Socioeconomic Rights Institute, also technical proposals, or either covered by what we have already informed the committee about. With regard to clause 9, the 10-year remuneration and terms and conditions of appointment of judges, AGRSA argues that it's important that all Land Court judges, being also judges of the Division of the High Court, should also sit in the High Court, and that's, of course, during, for example, periods of recess, etc. But the submission is not supported, Mr. Chair. The intention with the bill is to capacitate the Land Court with permanent judges so as to get rid of the backlogs and create the necessary jurisprudence in, among others, land claims issues. With regard to the appointment of officers and staff, CASAC is of the view that if the minister is given the power of appointing these officers, it would appear to be a function that is currently performed by the Office of the Chief Justice. However, we should take note of Section 11, Sub 1 of the Superior Courts Act, which empowers the minister to appoint a court manager, one or more assistant court managers, a registrar, assistant registrar, and other officers and staff whenever they may be required for the administration of justice or the execution of the powers and authorities of the court concerned. And the land...
Just a bit, it's not, I think it's something that we should bear in mind. I think those members who were part of the Fifth Parliament, is it not one of the concerns that the former Chief Justice has been raising, that the power to appoint court managers for their courts is one of the point of concerns? Honorable Horn and Honorable Rittenbach?
Yes, Chair, I would think that you're quite correct. It is an issue, and that's why it's so important that we ultimately work towards finalizing the court administration model, which was now again the topic of some discussion and debate during the OCJ debate. So I'm not quite sure whether we can fix this through this bill, maybe to answer your question directly.
I think let's have a comprehensive approach. I think let's leave it for now. I think let's have a comprehensive approach to it. Let us not deal with it piecemeal. What I would suggest is that we leave it for now, because it would mean amending the Superior Court Act, but it's something that we know that we have to come back to it once we have once all the interactions with the judiciary have been concluded. Including the one, I think the issue that is still before cabinet on the model. I think those are the issues that we might, either the next parliament would have to come. come back to it. But I think for now, because I don't think it's our intention for now to amend the Superior Court Act in a piecemeal way. I'm not sure whether members would want to engage that. Or we should leave it at that for now.
Chair, I agree with that approach. We need to finalise the court administration model as quickly as possible. It can't be done by way of this act.
Yes. It must not be a piecemeal approach, okay. Well, thank you very much. Honourable Nick, what to him?
Chair, I just have a question for clarity. The court administration model, is it the committee or is it OCJ or who is supposed to be working on that model? Just for clarity, Chair.
It is currently in the executive. I think the cabinet is dealing with that process. Yeah, they are the ones that they're still engaged. In fact, once they're done with the process, then they will engage with the judiciary. But I think at some point, Parliament will have to be involved. But for now, it is still the Minister is finalising it. He will present it to Cabinet. Then there will be engagement with the judiciary.
Okay, thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think let's proceed, Mr. Dupree.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Land Claims Court, that's technical, as well as with regard to the appointment of the assessors, and also the remarks made by the National House of Traditional Leaders, SA Institute of Race Relations, as well as the Legal Resources Center. With regard to the institution of proceedings in terms of Clause 13, AfriForum, technical in nature, also argue that reference is made to a person throughout the section. However, it's not clear whether this will include juristic persons such as trusts, companies, etc. Now, Mr. Chair, it's right that the term person is defined in the Interpretation Act to include anybody of persons, corporate or unincorporate. Land Claims Court, we've got technical proposals there. Agri-SA, Clause 13.3 refers to the prescribed manner and prescribed period. It's not clear in terms of what rules this will transpire. Now, the regulations will prescribe the manner and period for the referral of a matter to the Judge President. Yes, this is merely noting the support by APPIS for mediation in respect of the bill. The National House of Traditional Leaders argues that 99% of claims in the country are instituted by traditional leaders on behalf of community members. They recommend that the bill should make it clear that traditional leaders can institute proceedings in this act on behalf of their traditional communities. The department, however, does not support the proposal as discovered by Clause 13.1d, which provides that any person acting as a member of or in the interests of a group or class of persons may institute proceedings in the land court. The Legal Resources Centre, let me just, I apologize, Mr. Chair. This was done very late last night. Oh yes, the whole issue of mediation and arbitration comes into play here. And as we indicated yesterday, that issue is a bit fluid at this stage. The Western Cape government, the bill should specifically indicate that the processes in the Act in terms of which the court will have jurisdiction should be followed before proceedings can be instituted in the court. The department is of the view that there's no need for a provision of this nature. The Act only confers jurisdiction on the court to adjudicate disputes. The disruption or non-compliance with processes contained in other acts is something that simply will not, should not occur. With regard to the rules governing the procedure of the court, as the forum made a technical proposal, and then Basa said the same rules that apply to the High Court of South Africa should apply to this court. And that is, that proposal is supported by the Legal Academics and Legal Resources Center. Our response there, Mr. Chair, is that the bill provides for the application of the uniform rules in the land court, but we'll get back to this in a moment or two. The Land Claims Court submits that in Clause 14.1, as is the case with the Land Claims Court, the judge president be empowered to make rules. The Rules Board for Courts of Law has no experience in this field. Also, the High Court rules should apply where no provision is made for the rules or regulations. Supported by AgriSA Legal Resources Center and the Western Cape Government, the department does not support the proposal as the Rules Board is a statutory body established to make rules of courts for the country. The uniform rules do apply to the land court where no specific provision is made in the rules or regulations of the land court itself. AgriSA is of the view that might cause confusion if the court's procedures are subject to both the uniform rules and in its own rules. The response there merely is to say that the court will have its own rules and the uniform rules will apply to the land court where no specific provision is made in the rules or regulations of the court concerned. AgriSA also proposes that the Land Court Bill should also authorize the judge president of the court to issue practice directions from time to time, as circumstances may require, supported by ACPES. The directions that are issued by the Chief Justice under Section 8.3 of the Superior Courts Act, who then under 8.4 can delegate that power to any other judicial officer of the court concerned. So that proposal is covered, Mr. Chair. The SA Institute of Racial Relations. The bill undermines the establishment of procedural rules by suggesting that the court need to follow only those rules that facilitate the expeditious handling of disputes and the minimization of costs. The department does not agree. Clause 14.3 provides that the rules contemplated in subsection 1 must facilitate the expeditious handling of disputes and the minimization of costs involved. The Western Cape Government, once again, a technical proposal. With regard to the powers and functions of the court under other legislation, the legal academics suggest that the power and functions of the court might stem from other legislation. It might be prudent.
Mr. Chair? Are you having flu or is it something serious than flu?
I think it's something, no, it's not that serious. It's just that frog that bothers me. I don't know. It sometimes happened to me and always in the committee. I cannot talk for longer than 5 minutes, Chair.
Okay, let's give you a 5 minutes break again.
Thank you, Chair. I really apologize.
No, you don't have to apologize. Let's come back at 20 past 10. We can trust it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, with regard to the powers and functions of the court under other legislation, the legal academics suggests that the power and functions of the court might stem from other legislation, and it might be prudent to do an audit of those legislation to confer power on the court and to consolidate it in the bill. However, Mr. Chair, the department's view is that it has been indicated that the intention is to gradually extend the court's jurisdiction in terms of other pieces of principal legislation. So with respect, it will serve no useful purpose to list other legislation in the bill, because that would require the legislation or the bill to be amended continuously. With regard to the intervention to proceedings before the court, AfriForum proposes that clarity be provided on whether a referral to the legal aid board will lead to an automatic postponement of a matter and how many such postponements will be entertained. A limited time frame should be provided within which the legal aid board must indicate whether they will assist or not. And in short, the department is of the view that legislation cannot dictate how many postponements the court may allow in a matter, as this is something that lies within the discretion of the court. Also, as a technical proposal.
Myself as well, Chair, I was just wondering what postponements are they talking about in a legislation. I mean, just wondering. I thought that they're speaking about something else. But I think the response by the department is quite correct. Thank you.
No, it's proper, yes.
Thank you, Chair. Corruption Watch, it is submitted that the bill must provide clarity regarding the role of the Land Rights Management Facility and explicitly state whether the Land Rights Management Facility will continue to provide legal aid functions and be the accountable institution to Parliament regarding the legal aid expenditure. The Legal Resources Centre also supports that submission. Our response is briefly, Mr. Chair, that Legal Aid SA replaced the LRMF in the provision of legal aid.
I'm fine, Advocate. How are you? I wonder if you can help me. I've got...
Honorable Sona? Honorable Msema? Please proceed.
I think he's looking for legal advice, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Sure.
FW the Clark Foundation, AgriSA, technical proposals. The National House of Traditional Leaders recommends that where a party cannot afford to pay for legal representation, the court must arrange legal representation at the expense of the commission, the submission is not supported by the department, as funds allocated to the LRMF will be transferred to the Legal Aid SA. The Legal Academics, Legal Resources Centre and the Socioeconomic Rights Institute submitted comments of a technical nature. And then the Western Cape government came up with an interesting one. They say no specific mention is made of Amiki Kurei, which provide for the express provision should be made for the involvement of Amiki Kurei. And we indicate that clause 16.1 is wide enough to include persons who are interested in a case, especially the reference to any interest person, including an organization. So Amicus Curiae will be covered. With regard to clause 17, AgriSA made technical proposals there. Clause 18, the Land Claims Court also made technical proposals. Clause 18, of course, with the chair, deals with the judgment by default. And ACBIS indicated that the provision is supported in principle as a litigant who has followed the correct procedure should not be denied relief if the other party fails to respond. The provision should perhaps just be qualified in the context of an eviction order under PAI and the ESTA Acts. Now, the department's response is that the procedures contemplated in the legislation giving the course of action must be followed as set out in that legislation in order for default judgments to be granted. The Legal Resources Centre also made a technical proposal with regard to clause 19, witnesses. The Western Cape government said that the bill should define what is meant by a written instrument. Now, the ordinary dictionary meaning will apply to the extent that the term written instrument refers to a formal written legal document which reflects enforceable rights, obligations, or duties. The department is therefore of the view that it's not necessary to define written instrument. And then with regard to clause 20, witness fees, the Western Cape also made technical proposals. As far as the admissibility of evidence is concerned, AfriForum, undue hardship and prejudice will come to litigants if hearsay evidence is simply accepted, and the same goes for expert evidence which is not tested in a formal fashion. This section will lead to grave injustices. The response here is merely to say, Mr. Chair, that the court is required to give way to any evidence given before it that it deems appropriate. Now, BASA, with regard to clause 22.3, suggests that clause 3 should include specific factors for the court to consider when determining the weight or the admissibility of any evidence presented to the court in terms of subclauses 1 and 2 regarding hearsay evidence and evidence not admissible in court. The department is of the view that to set factors to be considered in the bill as suggested could fetter the judicial discretion when dealing with such evidence. AgriSA, the rules should provide some guidance on the kind of hearsay evidence that is admissible and how it should be evaluated. And the response here is the same as with regard to BASA. It will be extremely difficult in any event, Mr. Chair, for the legislature to provide such guidance, in my personal view, I think. ACBIS made technical proposals. The National House of Traditional Leaders support the view that the provision that hearsay evidence can be admitted in certain circumstances, and the department has noted their support. The Legal Resources Centre supports hearsay evidence, They point out that Clause 22.2 deals with the restitution cases only. This clause should be amended to apply to a range of legislation under the jurisdiction of the court. Now, the department's response to that, Mr. Chair, is that restitution cases are unique to the extent that land claims exist where most witnesses with first-hand knowledge of the matter may not live anymore, or other persons are old and may not remember certain facts anymore. In respect of the other range of legislation, it should be remembered that the admissibility of evidence will be determined in terms of the Evidence Act. National Employers Association of South Africa and Randwater and SAKA Liga, as well as the SA Institute for Race Relations, made technical proposals. Under Clause 23, the scope and extension, the execution of process of the court, the Land Claims Court made technical proposals there. It is noted for the committee to look at. The Clause 25, powers of the court, the Land Claims Court once again made technical proposals, whereas AgriSA argues that the application of subclause 2 should be restricted to cases where all parties where all the parties should consent to the referral of a question of law to the Land Court of Appeal, or the clause should be removed in its entirety. Now, we draw a comparison with section 158.4 of the Labour Relations Act, which has a similar provision. The court can refer of its own accord, or any party may request such referral. However, the court will likely hear submissions from the parties concerned regarding the proposed or the requested referral. Lamosa made technical proposals here, and then the legal academics, the powers set out in clause 22.1 of the Restitution of Land Rights Act should be included in the provision. The department is of the view that the provision is a general, wide-sweeping, empowering provision, and it's not necessary to refer to particular legislation. With regard to clause 26, the referral of a particular matter for investigation by a referee, these are also technical issues or technical proposals by the Land Claims Court and the Legal Resources Centre. You would like to maybe draw this morning specific reference to what the Rand Water has said. I argue that the clause should make reference to which persons qualify as referees, which will bring certainty as to who qualify as fit and proper persons for appointment. The department is of the view that it's not necessary to stipulate qualifications of referees. To insert qualifications may restrict the provision unnecessary, especially in view thereof that referral is upon agreement between the parties. With regard to pre-trial conference, CASIC and the IFW, the Clark Foundation, made technical proposals. Clause 28, court orders. CASIC, clause 28.3H provides that in the case where a claimant or an applicant is a community, the court may make an order to determine the manner in which the rights are to be held, or compensation is to be paid or held. It is submitted that this clause, by creating the possibility of compensation being held by someone other than the members of the community, may create opportunity for malfeasance and exploitation of vulnerable communities. The department would like to point out that the intention is that a determination is made as to who is to hold the rights or compensation on behalf of the community. The legal representatives of the parties will make suggestions to assist the court in this regard. Land Claims Court made technical proposals. Sorry, I just want to check with, yes, we're still with court orders. AgriSA points out that clauses 28, 3, 4, 5 and 8 are applicable only to restitution claims under the Restitution Act and should be retained in that act and not be put in the Land Court Bill. Now, Mr. Chair, here the response is quite simple or straightforward, that the intention is to have all court-related provisions contained in one statute and to avoid cross-referencing to the Restitution Act. APIS make technical proposals, and then the Legal Resources Centre is of the view that the court is not empowered to determine compensation in cases of expropriation. They express their concern with regard to that. And then we remind the committee that, again, it should be noted that the extension of the jurisdiction of the court will be enabled in terms of the different pieces of principal legislation. With regard to the variation and rescission of orders, CASAC made a technical proposal. Clause 30, costs of Afriforum, AgriSA, ACBIS, also made technical proposals. The SA Institute of Race Relations, it is submitted that since the law has long required fairness in the world of costs, the introduction of a separate fairness requirement simply promotes uncertainty and creates an ambiguous basis on which established rules can be undermined or bypassed. Now, it's not clear the requirement of fairness could promote uncertainty and ambiguity, Mr. Chair. However, the court must make a cost order in the light of the facts of the case, considering the requirements of law and fairness. They also argue that the wording in the bill makes no attempt to limit cost orders against lawyers with Stalingrad tactics, and it's far too broad to pass constitutional muster. The department's response is that it would be overly prescriptive to limit punitive costs to certain instances, as other instances may not be listed which would require to be penalized by punitive cost orders. With regard to mediation, Afriforum and Corruption Watch made technical proposals. The CASAC Clause 31.6 provides that if such a mediator is not in the employ of the state, they may be remunerated. It is submitted that such a mediator must always be remunerated. The regulations are intended to provide for the remuneration of mediators who are not in the full-time employ of the state. All mediators will be paid, Mr. Chair. Land Claims Court, AgriSA, technical proposals. And then APIS, the clause does not set out who appoints the mediator nor whether the mediator is required to have special knowledge, expertise or experience in land rights matters. Now clause 31.2a Roman 3 provides that the court must make an order appointing a fit and proper person as mediator to chair the first meeting of the parties. Clause 53.2g requires the minister to make regulations regarding the criteria for appointment, the appointment process, powers and functions, and remuneration for a mediator. I think that proposal then has been covered in our provisions as they stand in the bill at this stage. Lamosa also made technical proposals. The Legal Resources Centre supports the clause, Mr. Chair. And then once again with arbitration, we've noted yesterday, Mr. Chair, that this issue is still a bit fluid. And I don't think I'm going to belabor this point too much. The summary is there. Most of the parties are concerned about compulsory arbitration. And that is something that we have, to a large extent, covered in our 15-page summary for the committee. Settling matters out of court, AfriForum, mainly technical proposal, as well as the legal academics. With regard to the establishment and status of the land court, once again, similar concerns that were expressed with regard to the fact that the court will be a court of law and equity, the same or similar concerns have been expressed here, especially by AfriForum. The Land Claims Court, it's inquired if section or clause 34 is correct in providing the Land Court of Appeal, being a creature of statute, to have inherent powers. Now, if you look, for example, and once again we draw a comparison with section 167.3 of the Labour Relations Act, which provides that the Labour Appeal Court has inherent powers, and that court is, and this court will be a creature of statute. AgriSA made mainly technical proposals. You will note that I've started colouring them in a different colour just to not confuse myself, Mr. Chair, so do not worry too much about the blue highlights. Those are still technical proposals. And then clause 35, composition of the Land Court of Appeal. The legal academics, we've already covered this. They are concerned that only reference is made to the president, but we've explained to the committee that where we only refer to president, it's the president of the republic, as defined in clause 1 of the bill. The clause 36 dealing with the appointment of other judges of the Land Court of Appeal, Gazette. Clause 36.3 deals with the appointment of judges to the Land Court of Appeal and creates a requirement for the president to consult with the minister, chief justice, and the president of the Land Court of Appeal before, you see, it's actually judge president of the Land Court of Appeal before making such appointments. The wording of the clause creates an impression that the president enjoys a discretion as to the appointment of judges of the Land Court of Appeal, although it also provides that the president acts on the advice of the Judicial Service Commission. And primarily, or the short response is that the power of the president to appoint judges is constitutionally mandated, Mr. Chair. The Land Claims Court submits that it is unnecessary to specify that the president and the deputy...
Just a bit, Mr. Ducre, the head of the Land Court of Appeal, they are saying it will be a judge president. And then what will be the head of the your ordinary land court in the province? For instance, when you talk about the High Court, the JP would be for the division, and then for the SCA, which is the appeal, is the president. So what is the position in this case? Is it okay?
Sorry, Jed. I was just muted. I said I might have made a mistake. I apologize for that, but I'm going to ask Mr. Makuru Bete just to point me wrong or correct, with your permission, Chair.
That's fine.
Thank you, Chair. I can assist in that regard. What we are doing here is this. The Land Court of Appeal, the head of the Land Court of Appeal will be the president of the Land Court of Appeal. But the Land Court itself will have the head as the as the judge president of the Land Court. This is, we are following the same setup as in the the Labor Court of Appeal, Labor Appeal Court, mm-hmm. where the head of the Labor Appeal Court is the president of the Labor Appeal Court. That is how it is set up. The provisions are correct as they currently stand, as we are following the arrangement under the Labor Relations Act. Thank you, Chair.
No, that's clear. Thank you very much. You can proceed.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. The Land Claims Court submits my apologies, Chair. The Land Claims Court submits that it's unnecessary to specify that the President and the Deputy President of the Land Court of Appeal, referred in the clause, may be Supreme Court of Appeal judges. Now, it's merely kite or to clear the intention is made to appeal, Mr. Chair. And then clause 38, dealing with officers of the Land Court of Appeal, I think this is also a matter that we have raised, or the committee has raised earlier and pointed out to us, so I don't think we need to go into that again. However, it is of course a repetition of provisions that relate directly to the Land Court, but the committee has already given us some guidance in that regard. Clause 41, the rules for the Land Court of Appeal, pass our technical proposal, and then the Land Claims Court submits that in clause 41.1, the President of the Land Court of Appeal and not the Rules Board must make the rules of the Land Court of Appeal. The department does not support the proposal because it is the Rules Board established in terms of legislation that have to make the rules for courts. The Socioeconomic Rights Institute, clause 14.2 implies that the Land Court will function informally on the basis of the uniform rules of court. This is unsatisfactory. It is recommended that there should be basic rules of procedure to guide the court users. It is recommended that the bill includes a set of skeleton rules. Now, it has been submitted that where the uniform rules are insufficient, Mr. Chair, the Rules Court of, for Rules Board for Courts of Law will prepare the necessary rules. It is not feasible to include a set of skeleton rules in the bill because that may restrict future expansion of the rules as and when necessary. With regard to clause 42 dealing with the jurisdiction of the Land Court of Appeal and the power to hear appeals, AfriForum says is also not sensible since a decision of two judges cannot be a decision of the court if, for instance, five judges were to sit and the majority of three reach a different conclusion. Now, however, Mr. Chair, we would just like to indicate that in terms of clause 35.2, this court is constituted before any three judges. The decision of two of the judges will then be the decision of the court. Clause 43, dealing with appeals, the SA Institute for Race Relations and the Western Cape made technical proposals there, as well as with regard to clause 45, judgments of the Land Court of Appeal binding on the court. The Land Claims Court also there made a technical proposal. With regard to costs, the SA Institute of Race Relations, the bill does not address whether the Land Court of Appeal, like the court itself, can also make a cost order against the legal representatives of one or more of the parties. And our response is that the Land Court of Appeal has inherent and it is thereby empowered to issue punitive cost orders when warranted. With regard to the transitional arrangements in Clause 51 of the bill, the corruption watch, by merely replacing the land claims court with a new court, will not be sufficient to foster a transparent and corrupt-free land restitution program. It is submitted that Clause 51 should include provisions that allow for anonymous reporting channels to facilitate public reporting on the progress of the new court and its impact, including instances of corruption. The parliamentary committee should also bolster this provision by including accountability mechanisms to address public officials that are found to participate in corrupt conduct. The department's response is that the main challenge faced by the land claims court relates mainly to the lack of capacity and the judiciary of that court, resulting in backlogs of cases. The land court replaces the court, the land claims court, so as to do away with those challenges. Issues relating to corruption and reporting of progress are matters not proper for inclusion in the bill. Agri-SA, with regard to the transitional arrangements, made technical proposals, and then the National House of Traditional Leaders, it is recommended that in respect of claimants who already lodged their claims in terms of the Restitution Act, must be given the opportunity to choose whether their claims should be finalized in terms of the Land Court Act or in terms of the Restitution Act. The department would like to point out to the committee that the intention of the provision is that the court will decide that the matter has to be proceeded with in the court unless the court is of the view that this would not be in the interest of justice. The court will in all likelihood then allow submissions from parties for that decision to be made. With regard to regulations, Agri-SA made technical proposals as well as the National House of Traditional Leaders, the SA Institute of Race Relations. The Western Cape is of the view that it's unclear why there are no references to the Land Court of Appeal. Consider also adding references to the Land Court of Appeal. The argument here is that it's not necessary to include the Land Court of Appeal because the matter to be dealt with are functional in nature that do not concern that court. With regard to the short title and commencement, Lamosa is of the view that the land court will not assume jurisdiction over all 9 statutes on the day the Land Court Act commences or comes into operation, as Clause 54 of the bill allows the president to proclaim the amendment of the 9 statutes separately on different dates. Now, they are correct. The Interpretation Act provides for staggered commencement of sections of an act. However, it's not a given fact that different dates will ultimately be proclaimed by the president. With regard to the schedule, in general, Kusatu and LARC made technical proposals. APIS, the schedule awards land court exclusive jurisdiction over cases brought under both ESTA and PI. This raises the practical question of where the court will physically be located. Will it operate from premises currently occupied by land claims court in Randburg? Now, we point out that Clause 6.1 determines that the main seat of the court to be Johannesburg, but the judge president may determine that the court may hold any sitting elsewhere than at the seat of the court for hearing of any matter if it is expedient or in the interest of justice to hold its sitting. In terms of Clause 7.3a, the minister, after consultation with the Chief Justice, for the purpose of adjudicating land disputes may then by notice in the Gazette define the specific area and of jurisdiction of each court. The Socioeconomic Rights Institute made technical proposals, and then those, Mr. Chair, when the committee considers the schedule to the bill, the department would be able to then come back to these technical proposals and just highlight them to the committee. But as we said, this summary contains those proposals that the department does not agree with. Chair, that brings me to the end of the presentation of yesterday and today's submissions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ducree, and to your team. Members, any comments? Honorable Horn.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. May I ask when Mr. Ducree come back to us regarding arbitration, whether he also include the issue which to my mind remains a bit uncertain as to whether judges of the land court would be or could be tasked to act as the arbiters in respect of matters that are referred for arbitration, and if not, ultimately whether the department feels it's important to explicitly state that. And I'm asking this because right when the bill was announced, I believe, by the Minister of Affairs, some of the comments made at that specific press briefing did create the perception that the bill would ultimately enable such a situation as well. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Breitenbach.
Thank you, Chair. I'm covered.
Oh, you're covered. Thank you very much. Mr. Ducree.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Accidentally, or just by, well, yeah, me and my colleague have briefly discussed it a few weeks ago, but we haven't come to a final conclusion, and then, of course, recommendations to be submitted to the parties concerned, but we will certainly come back with answers with regard to that question raised. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Those are the only comments we have before we move to a way forward.
My apologies, Chair. May I maybe add one additional issue?
Mm-hmm.
Chair, obviously, we will have to do our own research into this matter as well, but the one aspect that I do believe the response to the submissions maybe did not consider the Constitution is in respect of the comments made by some commentators about this court being a court of law and equity. So my very brief interrogation of the subject has revealed that we have the labor court in our country as a court of law and equity. The difficulty, however, is that without let's say insulting all those who practice in labor law, is that we of course know that there's a very specific, let's say, dispensation with organized labor other fora that also can ultimately deal with labor relations and specifically, let's say, service conditions that ultimately is negotiated, I want to say, outside of the strict fora of the law, which might then necessitate, along with, of course, the considerations around the very unequal relationship between employers and employees, that there might be good reasons why our labor court is a court of law and equity. But that doesn't take away from the principle that the Constitution says our law are subject to the law and the Constitution. So that would mean, in my view, that unless we can make out a proper argument that equity is one of the considerations or key principles contained in the Constitution, that it might be, from a constitutional perspective, problematic to argue that this court is a court of law and equity. That's the one consideration. The other consideration is that, of course, the concept of equity have in different contexts very different meanings. So I would want to ask, Chair, that the department considers all of this and maybe just explain and unpack their view on the matter a bit further, specifically in relation to my last comments around the fact that equity, it would seem, have an ordinary meaning. If one goes to our common law, the courts of equity in the UK basically just means that where other orders were asked by litigants, the courts may make monetary orders instead. If that is the case here, then I think it would make sense. But ultimately, the request basically for the department to explain to us a bit better its reaction to the commentators, and then lastly, to consider whether the whole concept of equity, if it is to be retained, must then not be properly defined, so that ultimately everybody is given, I want to say, a full understanding as to what it in the context would mean. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Mr. Dupree would want to make a response to the comment, or would you want to go and work on it, as Mr. Honorable Horn is requesting that maybe there is a separate document where you will first define what do you mean by this equity, and do so a bit of work so that there is a common understanding as to what do you mean by a court of law and equity.
Chair, with your permission, we would like to come back to the committee and provide input in that regard, if it's in order with you.
No, I think it should be in order. So, members, I suggest that on Tuesday, we would start with the cannabis bill. We have permission to sit during the sitting, and then after two, then we will deal with this one, the land court bill. I suppose on Tuesday, Mr. Dupree, we will be starting with a clause by clause. Am I correct?
Mr. Chair, yes, I think that would be appropriate course of action for Tuesday.
Okay. So I think on Tuesday, as I've already outlined, that we start with the cannabis bill in the morning until lunch, and then after lunch where we proceed with this land court bill. This one shouldn't be too much of a problem, because I think there are three principal issues that maybe they would need a bit of discussion, but generally I don't see a lot of disagreement on many other issues. It's the issue of arbitration, it's the issue of the appeal, and then it's this issue of equity. I think that is where maybe we might need to spend a bit of time, because with respect to appeal court, in fact, yes, the Land Appeal Court and the issue of the Supreme Court of Appeal, I mean, should we take a view that, as we agreed yesterday, that it would, this bill cannot amend the Constitution, the issue would that mean that we take that clause completely that deals with the Supreme, with the Appeal Court, then where you would have issues being from the Land Court, then they will have to go to the Supreme Court of Appeal if you do not have the Appeal Court. And then there was also a view by Honorable Swart yesterday of creating a special chamber within the Supreme Court of Appeal. I think these are some of the issues that I think options would have to be developed, Mr. Dupree, so that we can engage on those issues, start to process the bill next week, Tuesday. But my understanding of the discussions today, except what Honorable Horn has raised with respect to equity, is that in most areas, the areas where you have disagreed with the, as the department, where you have disagreed with issues raised in the public comments, there is no disagreement on our side as the committee. We do support the stance that you have taken, which will make it easier for you to bring a consolidated proposal next week, save for the issues that we have left that needs more work to be done on. Is that in order, members?
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. I think Mr. Dupree, as we, and Mr. Dupree, and who is the other team member?
My team member is Mr. Makulubete, Mr. Chair.
Yes, and Mr. Makulubete, thank you very much for the good work that you have done so far. I think that you have made our work to be much more easier. Thank you very much. As we have promised you, that we are starting early because we want to give you the rest of the day to continue to do the work in preparation for next week, Tuesday. Thank you very much. I think you would be released. Members, can we just have a few minutes? You are released, Mr. Dupree. And Mr. Makulubete.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Honorable Breitenbach, is that an old hand or a new hand?
Sorry, it's an old hand. Sorry.
Oh, okay. No, thank you very much, members. I think if the committee secretary can fly to the program for the term, because we have revised the program as we had promised, but the revised program has not yet been adopted. I think it would be important for us to have a brief discussion to adopt the revised program. Committee Secretary, can you fly to the program?
Chair, perhaps while we're waiting for the program, I'm mindful of the fact that I have two dates that I need to arrange for the committee. But the program has just been so very busy these last 2 weeks. I haven't had time to meet with them. I'm meeting Professor Munting next week to set a date for that that meeting. And I'll also set up a Zoom meeting with the inspecting judge in order to finalize a date for that. So I will be able to come back next week with those dates.
That's good. Thank you very much. But I think those dates, it will be when we, I think it will be when we come back in the next quarter.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much. So, members, this is the revised program starting today. We have deliberated on the Land Court Bill. We have dealt with the cannabis bill yesterday, which is we will proceed with it next week. Two issues that I would like to bring to the attention of the members. One is the issue that Magistrate van Schalkwyk. You know that in the last quarter or even last year, she indicated that she was taking the Magistrate Commission on review, which I think is just part of the delaying tactics that she is using, because up to now there is no movement on her side. So we were just thinking that where it is reflected that we will be receiving briefings from the Magistrate Commission, we quickly discuss and come to a conclusion so that we adopt a report that would deal with whether we remove her from office or not. So yeah, if you can just flag the date of the magistrates, we will be dealing with the magistrate. Yes, it's on the 7th. Is it not possible that we can take this matter to be much quicker than like before the 7th?
Chair, since we are meeting on next week, Tuesday, since we've received permission to meet today, I think we can discuss on the matter on next week, Tuesday. Maybe it will be the first issue to deal with next week, Tuesday. And then on the following week, we will adopt that report so that it goes to the House if we will reach a conclusion.
Okay. Will that be in order, members?
Yes.
Thank you very much. So, Mr. Mthombeni, will we need the Magistrate Commission to come and brief us, or we are fine with the briefing we received?
I will consult with them and come back to the committee just to be sure, Chairperson. If there's any movement on their side since we've dealt with the matter, we will consult and come back.
Okay. And then, members, you remember that we received letters from Magistrate van Schalkwyk last year. I don't remember this year. So the guidance I'm requiring from the committee is whether before the 31st, should we write to her as a KTS to say we are now proceeding with this matter, because she wrote to us, and I think in one of the correspondence that she did, it was that if we proceed with the removal, she is going to take Parliament on review. Should we just proceed, or should we inform her as a courtesy that we are proceeding?
Chair, it's Werner on speaking. I believe it would just be proper for us to inform her that we, in the absence of noting any further developments, will proceed now.
Okay. I don't see any further any other hand on this matter. So we will write to her, advise her that we are proceeding on the 31st. And then the other issue that I would like to ask to talk about, you remember that last term, on the last day, we had that meeting where we reviewed our progress for the term and plan for the next term. Do you think that we need to do that for this coming term, where we have sort of a meeting, just an internal meeting, to say how did we fare this term, and then what are the plans for next term, so that we give direction to administration as to what will be our priorities for the next term, bearing in mind that there are issues that that need us to engage with external stakeholders, including Professor Martin. And well, I wouldn't regard Judge Cameron as an external stakeholder, but that should be reflected as part of our program and the issues of our oversight. And so how do you want us to proceed, Honorable Breitenbach?
I think the meeting was helpful, Chair, and I think could benefit from another one.
We could benefit from another one. So, Committee Secretary, can you fly to the program so that we can see when do we slot that in? Can you go down? When we deal with the Parliament budget vote and the presidency, we will be required, all of us, to be in the House. And then I think the 14th would be very busy. We start at 8 at 10. Usually it will be until late. And then on Wednesday, the 15th. So why? Maybe we should do the Wednesday, the 15th. Well, after that, it will be your 16th June. Then we will be done for the term.
No, it doesn't have to take long. Just 15th is fine.
Yes. Okay. But I think also on that day, we will have to receive. No. I think the issue of the, what is the issue of the oversight report, we have not discussed it since the last time we discussed it, and then we referred it back to the drafters to include certain issues that were missing. Now the issue is that whether we should discuss it before we adjourn, or let's wait for the last leg and discuss the whole program, in fact the whole oversight report that would have included the last two provinces that are outstanding.
Chair.
Honorable Horn.
Yeah, if at all possible, Chair, I believe we should try and adopt the oversight report before that meeting, because obviously the oversight reports must inform also to an extent our program next term in respect of follow-up meetings. That's the one issue I wanted to raise. The second issue I wanted to raise is to request, if at all possible, even if it's dealt with by you and our team, that we also, before the meeting of the 15th, just ascertain whether all of those reports and, let's say, other information, documents, that we asked for during our budget interrogation process of different stakeholders and role players, and specifically even or including those which we identified that were due in response to the BRRR process and which has not arrived, whether in fact all of those have arrived, so that those reports could also inform our discussions on the 15th, and in the absence of us receiving them, that eventuality or occurrence, of course, would also then, in my view, inform our program of action for the third quarter. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Horn. Well, that would is part of the preparations for the meeting of the 15th. Honorable Peterbach. You got an old hand or a new hand?
Again, it's an old hand, sorry.
Okay. But the question that I was asking members is that I think Honorable Horn is addressing an important issue, but a different one. The question that I was asking with respect to the oversight report of the provinces we have visited, we are left with two provinces, namely Northwest and Northern Cape. The question is whether we should first go to the two remaining provinces, then after that we have a consolidated report of all the provinces that we would have visited, or should we discuss what we have done already? And because the oversight visit for the other two provinces would be in the next term. I think that is the question.
Chair?
Honorable Mona?
I think how you are coining it, in that let's have a fully fledged report of the entire oversight program.
Okay.
Then we submit it. I would suggest that, Chair, as much as there's already been a draft for the oversight we've already undertaken, let's complete the course, then provide a full picture of what is happening across the institutions that report to us. I think let's do it like that, Chair. It's a suggestion.
Member, is there any objection to that? Committee Secretary?
Yes, thanks, Chair. Not necessarily, Chair, trying to object to what the members are discussing, but just as normally when we apply or to House Chair, they would find out if we have outstanding reports emanating from previous oversights, then they are reluctant when the committee has not adopted the previous oversight. That's the first issue. The second issue that I would want to bring to the attention of the committee is that I understand where Chair is coming from in a sense that to say, let's get the full picture and then develop an action plan on emanating from the entire oversight that would have completed, inclusive of the two provinces that are outstanding. And in terms of adopting the reports, because members would be aware that we had due dates on our first oversight. Even on the second oversight, there were due dates of certain reports that must be forwarded. So if we can adopt those while we are still planning to finalize the two provinces and receive all that information. And when we've received information emanating from the last two that we're going to do now, then we develop our action plan, because we would have had a full diagnosis of matters emanating from oversight. Then the action plan for the entire oversight would be directed in that direction. So we're fixing the plane while it's flying, Chair. Thanks. That's my take.
Yeah, the problem is that you get the due date and then you don't communicate them that they are due dates. You keep them to yourself.
We will have to improve on that, Chair. Our apologies.
In light of that, members, what do we say? So what was the last, what is the next due date? Yeah.
Most of the due dates, Chair, we discussed. Remember, we still, it was end of June, most of the due dates that we had, Chair. We still have to develop that program that says that most of the information that we want must be sent to us end of June, so that when we begin, we don't have anything outstanding.
Let me say that I would engage with the House Chair that we have taken this approach, then I will come back and report to the committee that we would like to have one consolidated report that we would do, and then we will report after we have gone to the two provinces. I will engage with the House Chairperson, because we have a peculiar and kind of a situation, and we wouldn't want to report some of the province and not other provinces. And then you have the JP saying that there was a report to Parliament, but it did not come to my province. So our approach is that let's go to all the provinces, and then we submit a consolidated report, because that report would need to go to the House and be debated in the House. But I will engage with the House Chair.
Proper, Chair.
Thank you very much. And then the last issue, members, you remember that in terms of the what we need to report back, when we were doing the budget votes, there was an issue with respect to the public protector, the litigation costs. She was given the 7 working days, and then she wrote back to us. I think, I'm not sure, when was the date, Sia? Or Bonang?
Well, she wrote on the last day.
Yes, she wrote back on the last day asking for an extension until the 10th of June. That was on the, what is the date? Yes, but the long and short of it is that she wrote on the 17th. The long and short of it is that she's asking for an extension until the 10th of June for her to give us the information. I thought I must report back so that the committee can give me direction as to how we should respond to that request. Because it was a committee decision that was made. And so I did not want just to make a decision without reporting back to the committee first. Honorable Breitenbach?
Chair, first of all, I'm really not happy that I requested an extension. Not at all. There's no reason at all why they can't furnish that information. And if they don't furnish it, then we all know what the reason for that is. But I want that information as soon as possible, which is my request, and I want that information as soon as is possible, please.
I think it would be important for us to have a date, an exact date that would be communicated. Because if I write back to say as soon as possible.
Yes, I don't suggest that we do that. The end of this month, not later then.
So there is a request for 31st May. Are we in agreement, members? Or is there anyone who's got a contrary view?
Honourable Neha Drufin, we agree, Chair.
Honourable Nivot Drufin, seconds. So we will write back to the public protector and saying that we request that information by the 31st of this month, end of business. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, members. I think most of the issues concerning the next term will be discussed on the 15th. And we would request the committee section, the secretariat, and the research unit to do what they did last time, but just to update what they did for us last time, which was very helpful, so that we use that to guide the discussion for that meeting of the 15th. That document that both Justice and Correctional Services did, I think it was very helpful with the assistance of the committee secretariat, so that we have guided discussions on the 15th. With that, members, I think the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.